Rick wanted to make a comment, and then we have a question over here. Just talk into a mic, right, Matt? Yep.
This is, yeah. I was delighted to hear not only that Randy is on the panel, but he has the project he has, because Randy is a very thorough and rigorous and honest analyst. Randy said earlier that reinsurance in and of itself doesn't save money, and he referenced the fact there's a loading factor for reinsurers. It can spread risk. It, in and of itself, as he just emphasized, doesn't save money. And I'm not going to surprise him in what I say next, because we've talked about this in the past. My concern is it can actually exacerbate the lack of accountability for costs. Since he alluded to the analogies of consumers sharing in costs, I think everybody in this room has heard the concerns from the left and the right about multiple private insurers. I happen to believe, as many people in the room do, in competition between the right kinds of health plans. But I think having 300 or 400 of them, none of which are in the position to really add any real value other than trying to all get the best health risk, isn't necessarily the kind of competition that does anything other than exacerbate healthcare costs. A criticism of multiple competing plans from the left is it's an extra layer of administrative costs. And a criticism from the right is it insulates consumers from costs. That's what insurance does. That's bad. These are the people that want people to be self-insured with savings accounts in lieu of health insurance. Reinsurance is not just a third party, it's a fourth party. It is inherently adding an extra administrative layer and insulating another layer from cost to a degree. Those are artifacts of what insurance reinsurance is. And you can design it to try to mitigate those two factors, as Randy said. But it's inherent in what reinsurance is. The only thing that Randy says, and I don't think he'll disagree with this, that I would take a bit of an exception to is that retrospective reinsurance is different, not just in terms of timing, but in terms of the nature of what it does than a risk adjuster. A risk adjuster, and I'm no expert on it, and I used to be back in its primitive stages when we could barnstorm and just talk, Randy and I could talk about it. Now it's high-level science among people who spend full time on it. But the basic notion is, for a risk adjuster, you say, okay, people with certain characteristics present certain risks, and we're going to pay the carrier who has these people with these risks an amount which fairly represents what it might cost on average, or half of that amount, depends on how you do it. And the plan then has every incentive of the world and its provider networks to manage those costs. With reinsurance, again, depending on how you design it, you can mitigate this, but with full reinsurance above a certain level, let's say 100% reinsurance for every case over $100,000, yes, you've made those carriers more willing to accept those people. But that means once people get expensive, they have a disincentive to manage the cost, because they'll spend administrative dollars that they might not get reimbursed for, and they'll only get the claims. And that can be mitigated by making it 80%, but only mitigated. So this is, to me, a key question about how you design reinsurance, or whether there are hybrids between reinsurance or risk adjusters, or as risk adjusters get better, whether risk adjusters are a better idea. Because our fundamental underlying question, as your two questions suggest, is healthcare cost escalation. And even though all these things we've been talking about can be separated from it, I, for one, am very apprehensive going with a major new initiative that could exacerbate inflationary pressures.
Conceptually, what Rick said is all right. At the high end, the transaction costs are already built in for those with private insurance. There are not that many claims at the very high end. It is possible to require high-cost case management and other things. The experience in New York was that, at least in the framework that they were dealing with a disproportionately healthy, previously uninsured population, and with managed care plans only cooperating, when they had a higher level of reinsurance that started at $30,000, they got almost no claims, which is why they lowered it, to make sure the subsidy would be there. All these things are highly context-specific. It is necessary to deal with the known thing that people, when given incentives, respond to those incentives in their self-interest. Big corporations are a little bit different from individuals. The analogy isn't perfect. All of these companies that would be participating in the type of incremental reinsurance scheme that one is describing have private business in which they are fully motivated, as Rick says, to do whatever it is they do with high costs. If they were better at doing that, of course, we wouldn't see the rapid cost growth that we do, and we wouldn't see such a huge percentage of cost there in the high end. So how much that is worth is an open question. Certainly, all the individual enrollees' incentives for cost containment, even if you're going with the health savings account, whatever, those are all gone by the time people get to the layers that we're talking about. So I think that while what Rick says is conceptually accurate, in practice it probably has less impact than that. As he says, it can be designed to a certain extent around a very big imponderable in my mind still. And I spent the day yesterday going around town with Milda Oxamatoukas, who stood up earlier talking with people in Wisconsin about how people see problems here in reinsurance. A very big issue is something that we haven't got a handle on yet, and that is this issue of churning in the small employer market, where clearly there's a lot of shopping around, there's a lot of bouncing from one insurer to another. As the employer tries to get a better rate, as the insurers are looking to get better employers. One interviewee yesterday said that it might be as many as 25% a year are doing that. There are very big transaction costs to that. And if that can be lowered, well, one thing you've done lately to lower transaction costs is the common application, which increases competition. If reinsurance can serve as a way that makes it easier to get stable coverage and priced coverage and simplifies things, and makes it easier for small business owners to focus on small business and not big healthcare, that's a good thing. I think one of the best conservative arguments for a universal coverage scheme is to take that element of risk out of somebody's business plan. It's hard enough to be an entrepreneur as it is without also having to be an entrepreneur in healthcare.
Okay, we have a question over here. Senator Miller?
Well, Senator Mark Miller. The point that Mr. Curtis made was the one I was rising to make, is that basically I see reinsurance as adding to the problem as rather than solving the problem. Wisconsin has a population of 5.5 million people. We can pretty accurately predict what the health care needs of 5.5 million people are going to be. It's much more difficult to, but when you start bringing that responsibility into various silos and where people are competing for the healthiest segment of that, then it becomes necessary to have reinsurance to help mitigate the risk. It would seem to me the fairest way to respond to that would be to distribute the risk over the whole 5.5 million people rather than having companies competing for various segments. And so, Mr. Curtis, I thought your comments were right on point, and I appreciate you making them.
What is your preferred reform, sir? I take it it's a single payer or state health service?
That's your accurate assessment.
Yes,
right?
Compare, all these things are irrelevant if you're the British National Health Insurance System. If, however, you want, as many people want, and if one recognizes that Americans are not Canadians, and that asked to form a queue, we form a funnel, maybe a little less in Wisconsin than in D.C., and there are huge variations from state to state and perhaps even within a state between Milwaukee and pick the place that's least like Milwaukee, it gets harder to maintain that. And so if one then goes through door number one rather than door number two about the basic choice of competition, then one needs to deal with the things that go with that. And if one has chosen that door, it doesn't help to say, well, we could have gone through door two. So that's certainly a first choice, is do you go down the road to door one or door two?
just to clarify,
It needs to be quick, Rick.
Yes, okay? This will be quick. I think structures like your state employee plan, which do have choice of competing systems and has in the Madison area been very successful compared to any place in the state or any place in the country, in containing costs is a very good structure and is different than, yes, than a pure single-payer system for sure.
As I mentioned before, we had some appointments canceled this afternoon, so you can meet with the speakers individually or as a group between 2 and 3:45 this afternoon. To schedule that, come up and talk to me or talk to one of our staff on the way out. I just want to make a couple introductions of my staff who are never in the room at this point. They're always getting ready to take your evaluations, so they'll be greeting you as they leave. Heidi Normandin, the state coordinator of the seminars. Thank you to our sound guru, Matt Stanos. The AV person was Jen Soibert. Mari Hansen has helped us with 7 seminars. We had Stephanie Eady helped write our report, and we have several students helping us, Nicole Annenson, Sarah Dellinger, and Maureen Indig. The final introductions are for our moderators for the discussion sessions that follow. You're welcome to attend either of these discussion sessions, even if you didn't register. We're going to have a discussion session with Patricia Butler. This is on designing access initiatives to avoid an ERISA challenge. You will be down the hall in room 415 Northwest. The moderator is my colleague, Dave Riley. He's an endowed chair. He's a professor of human development and family studies. He's the associate dean of outreach and extension in the School of Human Ecology. We're going to have a discussion session with Rick and Randy where they can continue this and a little dialogue about reinsurance.
It's a swap position.
There's policy approaches in other states. It's room 400 Northeast, right down the hall this way. It's going to be moderated by Professor Mark Brown. There he is. He's an endowed chair in risk management and insurance, and he's the associate dean of undergraduate programs in the School of Business here at UW-Madison. Again, please leave your evaluations. Let me know if you want a personal appointment this afternoon. We're driving to the airport about 4. Our next seminar will be in October, the topic to be determined by the legislators who advise us. Thank you all for coming.